a partnership open to all nations, regardless of their size or any other qualifier.
The U.S. Defense Secretary reassures U.S. support in Asia. It's Monday, June 5th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online at VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, a deadly Chinese crackdown remembered 28 years later. Calls for political cooperation to stop Afghan violence. U.S. schools remain a top education destination, navigating by the stars and gourmet prison food. We serve it up now on VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of Defense James Mattis used a top regional security forum in Singapore this weekend to try and reassure Asia that the United States is not backing away from its enduring commitment to the region. Analysts say how convinced Washington's allies and partners in the region will be remains to be seen. Since Donald Trump became president, both Mattis and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson have made several trips to the region, a point the Secretary of Defense says highlights Washington's enduring commitment to the security and prosperity of the region.
That enduring commitment is based on strategic interests and on shared values of free people, free markets, and a strong and vibrant economic partnership. A partnership open to all nations, regardless of their size, their populations, or the number of ships in their navies, or any other qualifier.
Mattis did not say much on the sidelines of the meetings, noting that he was largely at the Shangri-La dialogue to listen. He met with regional allies and partners in between sessions, including holding a trilateral meeting with Japan and South Korea. Early Sunday, he had a unique get-together with all 10 defense chiefs from the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. When it came to the South China Sea, Mattis called China's ongoing militarization of man-made islands there and its disregard to international order unacceptable. He added conflict is not inevitable, even amid competition between the world's two largest economies.
Artificial island construction and indisputable militarization of facilities on features in international waters undermine regional stability. The scope and effect of China's construction activities in the South China Sea differ from those of other countries in several key ways. This includes the nature of its militarization, China's disregard for international law, its contempt for other nations' interests, and its efforts to dismiss non-adversarial resolution of issues.
His speech was the Trump administration's first real address to the region as a whole, and Mattis spoke at length about the importance of rules-based international order and how every country, both big and small, should have a voice in shaping the international system. Kurt Campbell, former Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs, said Mattis's speech did a very good job in describing continuity in the United States' position toward the region.
If it was his speech on its own, I think I would be reassured. I think the larger challenge, though, it comes in a larger context.
Campbell said the speech was strong and reassuring, but it came just after President Trump pulled out of the Paris Climate Change Accord. Some wonder what Trump's America First policy means for Washington's global leadership role. Others have noted the space it has created for China to assert its expanding economic and diplomatic clout. William Chung of the Shangri-La Dialogue.
In the Asia-Pacific, probably one of the fastest growing regions in terms of military spending and development of military capability, we are seeing not very much kind of definitive statements from the new administration in terms of what their approach is on defense and security in this part of the world.
Defense Secretary Mattis applauded China's efforts to work with the international community on North Korea. Without elaborating, he said countries are working on new enhanced sanctions and diplomatic efforts to put more pressure on North Korea. Kim Jong-un's persistent threats and missile tests appear to be wearing down support for North Korea in China, and calls for a tougher response from Beijing are growing. Our thanks to VOA's Bill Ide at the Shangri-La Dialogue in Singapore for sending us the story. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Mattis gives assurances of U.S. enduring commitment to Asia. Russia says North Korea nukes are a direct threat. Cambodian election is a test for prime minister. Southeast Asia joint patrols aimed at Islamic militants. Remembering Tiananmen Square 28 years later. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Rights activists in Hong Kong commemorated the 28th anniversary of China's Tiananmen Square protests, once again calling on China to revise its official explanation of the event. Yung Sam is the former chairman of the Hong Kong Democratic Party and a senior organizing member of the June 4th candlelight vigil.
We will not give up, and we will keep on the campaign to ask the Chinese government to admit the mistake, make the apologies, and to rehabilitate the position of their position on the June 4th. Because we think the June 4th is a patriotic and democratic movement for the people in China.
On June 4, 1989, Chinese tanks rolled into crowds of demonstrators in and around Tiananmen Square, opening fire. No one knows how many were killed. China's government refers to the event as the June 4th incident and downplays its severity. Discussion of the event in media or textbooks is largely forbidden, with many well-known and enduring images to the world remaining unknown to those inside China. Stories from people directly involved also remain quiet secrets. Journalist Louisa Lim spent 10 years in China reporting for the BBC and for the U.S.-based National Public Radio. Lim took extraordinary precautions to gather interviews to tell some of these stories in her book, The People's Republic of Amnesia.
People who were involved in the events, they're growing old, and their stories are not being told. So I really hope that this book will really, in some ways, reopen the discussion about how history is treated and how people in China have gone along with the government and how this whole sense of national identity that has been created is actually riding on the back of, in many ways, history which is false.
Tell me a little bit about some of these interviews that you conducted and some of the logistics involved in speaking with these people. It's a very sensitive topic.
It is a very sensitive topic, and several of the people who I interviewed were under various forms of surveillance because of their pasts. So, for example, there's one woman called Zhang Xianling, 76 years old, but she is a co-founder of a group called the Tiananmen Mothers. Her 19-year-old son died in 1989. He died from one bullet to the head when he tried to take a picture of the martial law troops. And she set up this group with some of the other relatives of the dead, trying to get a truth, compensation, and accountability from the Chinese government. The first time I went to visit her, when she opened the door to me, the very first words that she said were, "I had a telephone call from the police this morning, and they knew you were coming."
It's truly amazing that a lot of these people, especially now in their 70s, are still followed so closely that the government still has a sense of distrust in what they might be up to.
Yes, you have a country that is the world's second largest economy with almost $4 trillion in reserves, and yet they're worrying about the activities of a very small group of people. Zhang Xianling, the woman who co-founded the Tiananmen Mothers, I think she summed it up best when she said to me something along the lines of, "Isn't it amazing that the state can be so worried about a little old lady like me? It shows how powerful we are, these group of old people, because we represent righteousness, and the state knows that, and that's why they're scared of us."
Did you get any sense through your interviews that at some point in time, the government may open up a little bit about this issue, or are they just content to let it disappear into the fog of history?
There was hope before Xi Jinping and Li Keqiang took power that this might happen. But in fact, very early on, Xi Jinping signaled that, you know, not only was 1989 not up for discussion, but actually anything that happened even during the reign of Chairman Mao, none of that was up for discussion. When I started doing this book, and I just wanted to find out how much young people knew about 1989, I went to some of Beijing's top universities, and I took the picture of Tank Man, the man standing in front of the line of tanks, and I asked 100 students if they could tell me when and where this picture was taken, and I was really surprised that only 15 out of 100 could place the picture as being taken in China. And that really made me think that the Chinese government's been very successful at, you know, deleting this memory and at making sure that young people, they're just not interested in politics. They don't seek out that kind of information because they know that it could be dangerous.
There were other protests, many protests around the country, and you found that the student protest wasn't so much about democracy, but it was about corruption within the Communist Party. And interestingly, that seems to be one of the top complaints among Chinese residents today.
Yes, indeed. And I mean, I think that really remains one of the reasons why the events of 1989 are so relevant to the leadership today. I mean, if you look at all of those unresolved demands that the students had for more freedom, more democracy, tackling corruption, tackling abuse of power, constitutionalism, these are all topics that really have not been resolved. And these demands, you know, are more pressing than ever today. So I think that is really at the crux of some of the fears that the government has over Tiananmen, that if people find out what happened and find out these were the very same demands that people have today, they will be asking, well, what has the government been doing all these years?
Journalist Louisa Lim, author of The People's Republic of Amnesia. Happening now in Asia, police in the Philippines say the suspect in the deadly attack that killed at least 36 people in a Manila area casino last week has been identified as Jesse Carlos. Philippine authorities say Carlos stuffed a backpack with casino chips before he was found dead of an apparent suicide. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Each and every day, we're glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. Thank you for listening. Afghanistan's Taliban has stormed a key northern district as the turmoil-hit nation reeled from last week's deadly suicide bombings, with demands growing for the National Unity Government to quit for failing to provide security. Nearly 700 casualties in three back-to-back incidents in Kabul have made the past week the bloodiest for the Afghan capital in three decades. The Taliban denied the attacks and blamed internal rivalries in the government. Tadamichi Yamamoto, head of the UN assistance mission in Afghanistan, reiterated his call for seeking a negotiated settlement to the Afghan conflict.
In the context of so much suffering, now is the time to seek unity and solidarity. I have spoken with a broad spectrum of Afghanistan's political leaders, highlighting the importance of unity. They agreed that working together is essential to stop the cycle of violence. Calm is now called for. Meaningful steps must take place now to obtain an immediate nationwide halt to violence. I encourage all parties to enter discussions toward that end.
The United States also called for Afghan leaders to stay united under the challenging circumstances. The controversy-marred presidential election in 2014 prompted the United States to help mediate a deal to form the unity government. But critics say differences over a number of issues, including appointments to key posts in security and other government institutions, have hampered international-backed efforts. The internal rifts, coupled with rampant corrupt state institutions, are blamed for the deterioration in national security and territorial insurgent gains on the battlefield. We send our thanks to Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad for sending us this story. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Cambodia's main opposition party made significant gains in local elections Sunday, which could threaten Prime Minister Hun Sen's grip on power. Preliminary results show the opposition party won about 46% of the communes, up from 30% 5 years ago. Official results announced June 25th. All the big stories are on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, international applications are down at many American universities, and educators blame a perception that the United States is less than welcoming to overseas visitors. A recent move to limit out-of-state undergraduates at the University of California has heightened concerns. However, VOA's Mike O'Sullivan tells us more international educators who are meeting in Los Angeles say the United States remains the destination of choice for the world's students.
The University of California is capping enrollment of out-of-state undergraduates, including foreign students, to make more room for more Californians. But international students usually pay higher tuition fees, so this may not start a trend for public universities in other states.
And I, in fact, think it will most likely be the opposite, because as state funding for higher education continues to become tighter and tighter, and this is only within the public sector, many states are allowing their universities to find new means to recruit students, including an expanded focus on recruiting international students.
Which includes expanded overseas recruitment, already popular at many private schools. Also of concern for international students, President Trump's ban on travel from six majority Muslim countries. While its implementation has been blocked so far, international educators say students are watching.
Some of them did prefer to go to Canada or Australia, but still, I think it's not had a big impact.
Many American universities actively recruit overseas.
In our math department, if we did not have our Asian students and instructors and graduate students, I don't think we would have a math department.
Studying in America helped a former student from India.
America has already such a big draw, so you have people from so many different parts of the world already coming here. So this is the best place to meet and make connections.
And it helps American students.
They have colleagues and peers who are from those parts of the world that they can build businesses with, you know, start companies with, helps us to grow our footing in other markets that are really important.
Says a university advisor who came here as a student from Sudan.
This country is all about inclusion, and diversity, and that's the secret of America.
These educators agree that public universities must serve American students, but say international students enrich their institutions, and that it's just a question of finding the right balance. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
At this hour in Asia, rights activists in Hong Kong commemorated the 28th anniversary of China's deadly Tiananmen Square protests, once again calling on China to revise its official explanation of the event. China's government refers to the event as the June 4th incident and downplays its severity. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, today's travelers on land, sea, and air rely on one of the satellite-based navigational systems commonly known as GPS, where G stands for global. Scientists at NASA will now soon start experiments aimed at changing global to galactic, as they plan to use neutron stars known as pulsars as positioning beacons. VOA's George Pudich visited NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center to speak with astrophysicists involved with the project.
Thursday's launch of the Dragon cargo spacecraft towards the International Space Station may go down in the history of space research as the beginning of a future interstellar navigational system. Along with fresh supplies, the Dragon is carrying a special telescope called the Neutron Star Interior Composition Explorer, or NICER, that will look closely at these mysterious stars. They are small, about 15 to 20 kilometers across, but can contain mass of up to two of our suns, making them so dense that a teaspoon of a neutron star's matter weighs about 10 million tons.
At those kinds of densities, we don't know how matter behaves. We don't know what matter is, so we don't know what neutron stars are made of. We don't know what goes on inside them.
But neutron stars have another interesting and potentially useful feature. From their north and south poles, they emit strong X-ray beams. As they spin very fast, at constant speed, if those beams shine in our direction, we can see them as pulsating beacons. The extremely stable timing of those signals and the fact that they are in fixed positions relative to the Earth makes them similar to GPS satellites. In the experiment nicknamed Sextant, scientists will explore the possibility of using pulsars for precise interstellar navigation.
Often you'll hear the satellites in GPS called the space segment, right? Where the space segment for us becomes the pulsars themselves. So they become our atomic clocks. Their signals are unique. They have a unique fingerprint, and we're able to look at those and reconstruct those signals and process them as measurements to update navigation.
For future astronauts traveling to other planets, loss of communication with Earth would be very dangerous, so being able to accurately find their position is of crucial importance. The NICER Sextant project was developed by NASA in cooperation with scientists from the nonprofit University's Space Research Association. It is expected to last for 18 months, after which the telescope will be open for researchers worldwide. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
No matter where your GPS location may be, you'll probably agree that cafeteria food rarely seems to draw high praise, and you might imagine that prison food ranks even lower on the culinary scale. But a jail in Chicago is serving some of the best Italian pizza in town. Inmates are making gourmet pizzas for their fellow prisoners. VOA's Deborah Block says it's all part of a training program called Recipe for Change, where the inmates can acquire skills to get jobs after they're released.
Behind the barbed wire and security gates at Cook County's jail in Chicago, you would not expect inmates to be making gourmet pizzas in a top-of-the-line oven.
I could work the oven, I could dress the pizzas, I could make the dough from scratch, I could make a lot of things, and I like everything I do.
For some prisoners, it brings back feelings before they ended up in jail.
Memories when you was free and you was having a good time.
About 200 of the delicious pizzas are baked each week and delivered to other inmates in the jail who pay no more than $7 for each pie.
And when you deliver the pizzas, they face like, oh, my pizzas here, they just, eyes light up like it's Christmas. Like, they love it. They love it. They keep ordering every week.
The cooks are guided by an Italian chef.
I use all the good ingredients. Most of the people here, they don't know what basil is, what zucchini is. So that's where, you know, this program is about. It's about culture also.
He believes giving the prisoners a break from their usual bland food can have a positive effect on their behavior.
Through food, I try to teach, you know, how to change in life.
And the program seems to be working.
And the chef make us feel like we got to have a plan when we get up out of here to stay us out of trouble and not coming back to this environment.
The money raised from the pizzas goes back into the Recipe for Change program, which hopes to get a food truck to sell pizzas outside the jail, including the nearby courthouse. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
It seems appropriate they're making gourmet pizzas in Cook County. We hope the food is good at Chung Rung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan. Hello to everybody listening there on Star Radio FM 88.3. You can write to us as well. Just check us out on VOA Asia Facebook or our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Our thanks to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Aiden Utku, Managing Editor Diane Gao, David Byrd and Ali Ogden on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have a great day.